Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So I'm a big fan of standardization. There's been some great efforts. It's a topic that rarely gets much attention or celebration. Little things like the work of the International Standards Organization to define a common set of standards for something that seems as boring as world currencies or countries. In my experience, dealing with data in various financial projects is actually monumental, because everyone, when you're looking at data, everyone has a different idea. They're going to, you know, some people will write the US dollar as USD on their spreadsheet, some as US. So although this seems like a very boring topic, the simple act of standardizing whatever can be standardized actually has huge benefits. One thing that is very much not standardized is the type of electricity supply we use around the world. And there's a lot of other things that we could cite as examples, but let's talk about electricity because it happens to be on my mind today. We have different types of plugs around the world, and we have different types of voltages. The US, as is well known, operates on 110 volts. In Europe, we have 230 volts. We have different types of plugs. Some of those are safety standards, but why don't we just agree upon a common type of electricity? I mean, think about all the transformers and electronic waste that wouldn't need to be produced if we just said 220 volts is good enough. How did this even come about? The countries use different voltages. And has anyone ever proposed that we just, as it doesn't seem like a very contentious topic, we just kind of agree upon it and form an international standard and call it a day? Over to you, Herman and Corin.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am joined as always by my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And man, do we have a deep dive for you today. It is January 6, 2026, and the world is still as fragmented as ever when it comes to the very thing powering our lives.
It really is. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note this morning that got us both thinking. He was talking about how much he loves standardization. You know, things like the International Standards Organization setting codes for currencies and countries. It makes life so much easier for data and logistics. But then he looked at his travel adapter and wondered, why on earth haven't we done this for electricity?
It is the ultimate why is this still a thing question. We have different plugs, different frequencies. If you travel from New York to London, your hairdryer might literally catch fire if you do not have the right transformer. It seems so archaic for 2026, right? I mean, we have self-driving cars and AI that can write poetry, but we cannot agree on how to stick a piece of metal into a wall.
Exactly. Daniel was pointing out that a common standard would cut down on so much electronic waste and the need for all these bulky adapters. He was looking at the sheer volume of plastic and copper sitting in junk drawers around the world. So today, we are going to look at how we got into this mess, why the world is split between 110 and 230 volts, and if anyone has actually tried to fix it.
Oh, people have tried. It is a story of ego, war, and the literal physics of light bulbs. I've been digging into the history of this all morning, Corin, and it is fascinating how much of our modern world is just built on top of decisions made by a few guys in the late 1800s who were basically guessing as they went. We are talking about the legendary War of Currents.
It is that classic path dependency we talk about sometimes. Like when we discussed the persistence of mainframes in episode 264, once you build the infrastructure, you are kind of stuck with it. But with electricity, it feels even more fundamental. So, Herman, let us start at the beginning. Why 110 volts in the United States? Why that specific number?
It all goes back to Thomas Edison. When Edison was developing the first commercial electric power distribution system in the 1880s, he was using direct current, or DC. His big invention, the incandescent light bulb, used a carbon filament. And through a lot of trial and error, He found that these carbon filaments worked best and lasted longest at around 100 volts.
So he just picked 100, because it was a nice round number?
Well, he actually went with 110 volts at the generating station because he knew there would be a voltage drop as the electricity traveled through the wires to people's homes. He figured by the time it reached the actual light bulb, it would be right around that sweet spot of 100 volts. It was a practical engineering-led decision based on the limitations of the materials he had at the time. But Edison was also a businessman, and he wanted to control the entire ecosystem from the generator to the bulb.
That is wild. So the entire power grid of North America is essentially calibrated to the needs of a 19th century carbon filament light bulb? That feels like building a highway system based on the width of a horse's rear end.
Pretty much. And because Edison was the first to really roll out a large-scale system, particularly in New York, with the Pearl Street Station in 1882, that 110-volt standard became baked into the American infrastructure. By the time better filaments came along, like tungsten, which could handle higher voltages, the U.S. already had thousands of miles of wire and millions of devices built for 110. But then, the plot thick is, because Edison
The AC versus DC battle. This is where Nikola Tesla enters the chat, right?
Exactly. Tesla and Westinghouse championed alternating current, or AC. The big advantage of AC was that you could use transformers to step the voltage up to thousands of volts for long-distance transmission and then step it back down for home use. Edison's DC system could only send power about a mile before the voltage dropped too low. Edison tried to smear AC as dangerous, even going so far as to publicly electrocute animals to prove his point. But
So if AC won the war, why didn't Westinghouse just change the voltage to something better than 110?
Because they were competing for Edison's customers. To win people over, Westinghouse had to make sure his AC system could run the same light bulbs people already owned, so he stuck with the 110-volt standard to ensure compatibility. It was the first major instance of lock-in in the tech world.
Okay, so that explains the US. But then how did Europe end up at 230 volts? Did they just wait for the better light bulbs and skip the drama?
In a way, yes. Europe started their electrification slightly later than the US. By the time they were really building out their grids, companies like AEG in Germany realized that higher voltage was actually much more efficient for distribution. They weren't as tied to Edison's early carbon filaments.
Right, because of the relationship between voltage, current, and resistance. I remember some of this from high school physics.
Exactly. You remember the physics. It comes down to Joule's law, which states that the heat lost in a wire is proportional to the square of the current. If you double the voltage, you can provide the same amount of power with half the current. And since the loss is the square of the current, halving the current means you lose 4 times less energy as heat. Or, even more importantly for a growing city, you can use much thinner copper wires to carry the same amount of power.
So the Europeans looked at the American system and said, "That is a lot of expensive copper you were wasting there."
Precisely. In the late 1890s, German engineers realized that if they moved to 220 volts, they could save a fortune on infrastructure. They waited until metal filament bulbs, which could handle the higher pressure, became common. By the time the 20th century rolled around, Europe was standardizing on 220 to 240 volts, while the US was already too far gone. They had a huge installed base, as we would say in tech today, replacing every blight blob a teed fit at Wukigrabemen
Verning in the name. It is funny because we often think of the US as being the leader in infrastructure, but in this case, being the early adopter actually led to a less efficient, long term standard. It is the first mover disadvantage.
It really is. And the split got even weirder when you add frequency into the mix. You know the 50 Hz versus 60 Hz thing? This is the part that really messes with your electronics.
Right, that is the other half of the puzzle. Why do we have different cycles per second? I remember we touched on some of the math of timing in episode 252 when we talked about network latency, but this is a different kind of timing.
It is. So, 60 Hertz became the standard in the US, largely because of Nikola Tesla. He figured out that 60 Hertz was the Goldilocks frequency for AC motors and transformers. If the frequency was too low, like the 25 Hertz systems used at Niagara Falls, the lights would flicker visibly to the human eye. It was like living in a slow-motion strobe light. If it was too high, you had major efficiency losses in the transformers due to magnetic effect.
And 50 Hertz? Was that just Europe being contrary again?
Not exactly. It was more about the metric system, believe it or not. The German company AEG, which I mentioned earlier, had a bit of a monopoly in Europe. They looked at Tesla's 60 Hertz and decided that 50 Hertz fit better with the metric units they were using. It was a rounder number in their system. They also found that 60 didn't fit their specific generator speeds as well.
Wait, so we have a global divide because one guy liked the number 60 and another guy liked the number 50 for aesthetic or metric reasons. That is incredibly frustrating.
It gets even more chaotic when you look at Japan. Japan is actually split down the middle. The eastern part of the country, including Tokyo, uses 50 Hertz because they bought their first generators from AEG in Germany. The western part, including Osaka, uses 60 Hertz because they bought theirs from General Electric in the US. To this day, Japan has to maintain massive frequency converter stations just to move power across the country. It is a logistically
That is the ultimate example of why standardization matters. Imagine the cost of maintaining two separate grids in one island nation. But Daniel's point in the prompt was about the waste. Think about the millions of tons of plastic and copper that go into making travel adapters and dual voltage power supplies. Has there ever been a serious attempt to just stop the madness and pick one?
There has, and this is the part that usually blows people's minds. There actually is an international standard for a universal plug-in voltage. It is called IEC 6906-1.
Wait, I have never seen a universal plug. What does it look like? Is it some kind of futuristic multi-prong thing?
It was developed by the International Electrotechnical Commission in the 1980s. It looks a bit like the Brazilian or Swiss plugs. Three thin pins in a slightly flattened triangle shape. It is rated for up to 250 volts. It is incredibly safe. It is compact. It is basically the perfect plug. If we all used it, you could take your laptop from Chicago to Shanghai to Stuttgart and never need an adapter.
So why am I still carrying a brick in my suitcase when I go to London? Why didn't we just adopt it in the 80s?
Because by the time the IEC published the standard in 1986, the world was already plugged in. To switch to a universal standard, every single home and business in the world would have to replace their wall outlets. Every manufacturer would have to change their power cords. The cost would be in the trillions of dollars. There was no immediate killer app that made the switch worth the pain.
It is the ultimate coordination problem. No one wants to be the first to switch because their devices won't work anywhere else, and no one wants to be the last because they're stuck with the old tech. It is like trying to get everyone on Earth to start speaking Esperanto tomorrow.
Exactly. There was a brief window after World War II when a lot of Europe was rebuilding and they could have standardized, but instead, countries doubled down on their own designs as a way to protect their domestic markets. If you have a unique plug, it is harder for foreign competitors to just dump their appliances into your country. It was a form of non-tariff trade barrier.
That is a cynical but very realistic take on it. Protectionism through plastic pins. But surely in 2026 we are seeing some progress? I mean, the EU has been very aggressive about this lately.
You are right. The EU Common Charger Directive, which fully kicked in a couple of years ago in late 2024, was a massive turning point. It forced all small electronics, phones, tablets, cameras, to use USB-C. That has already eliminated an estimated 11,000 tons of e-waste annually in Europe alone. We are seeing a soft standardization happening right now, and it is not coming from the wall outlet. It is coming from the cable.
You mean USB-C is becoming the de facto global standard for low power?
Exactly. Think about it. 10 years ago, if you traveled, you needed a different power brick for your laptop, your phone, your camera, and your toothbrush. Now, almost everything can be powered by a single USB-C cable. We have essentially moved the standardization layer from the wall side to the device side. The wall still gives you whatever weird local flavor of electricity it has, but the power brick handles the conversion, and the cable is the same everywhere.
That is a great point, and those power bricks are getting smaller and more efficient, right? I remember you mentioning something about a new material a few episodes back.
Yes, gallium nitride technology, or GaN chargers. They are a game changer. Traditional silicon-based chargers lose a lot of energy as heat, which is why they have to be so big. GaN chargers are much more efficient, which allows them to be tiny while still pumping out 65 or even 100 watts of power. They can handle anything from 100 to 240 volts and output exactly what the device needs over USB Wii, wire bypassing the proper graben eept clay bite. Widdick with the had produce the deep.
I see what you were saying, but it still doesn't solve the waste issue Daniel mentioned for the big stuff. We are still manufacturing millions of different wallside cables or regional plugs for those chargers. And for high power stuff like kettles, hair dryers, or washing machines, USB-C isn't going to cut it. You still need that heavy duty physical connection to the grid.
You're right. For the big appliances, we are likely stuck with the current mess for the rest of our lives. The sheer inertia of the building industry is too much to overcome. But I do wonder, if we were starting a colony on Mars today, what would we use? If you have a blank slate, do you go with the US standard or the European one?
Oh, that is a great thought experiment. I bet the engineers would have a field day with that.
I think you have to go with a higher voltage, right? 230 volts. It is just objectively more efficient for the wiring. You save on copper, you have less heat loss. And you would definitely go with 60 Hz because it is slightly better for motors and completely eliminates any chance of light flicker.
So the perfect system is a hybrid of the two? European voltage and American frequency?
That would be the engineer's dream. But on Earth, we are stuck with our history. It is like the QWERTY keyboard. It was designed to slow down typists so the mechanical arms wouldn't jam, and now, even though we use digital screens, we still use that same layout because our brains are wired for it. We are victims of our own success.
I actually want to push back on the safety aspect for a second. I have heard people argue that the US 110 volt system is actually safer because if you get a shock, it is less likely to kill you than 230 volts. Is there any truth to that, or is it just American cope?
It is a bit of both. It is true that a shock from 110 volts is generally less dangerous than 230 volts because there is less electrical pressure to push current through your body. However, the US system compensates for that lower voltage by requiring higher current for the same power. Higher current means more heat in the wires, which actually makes house fires more likely if the wiring is old or faulty.
So it is a trade-off between less likely to electrocute you and more likely to burn your house down. That is a grim choice.
In a very simplified sense, yes. But then you look at something like the British plug, the Type G. Have you ever really looked at one of those, Korn?
The big chunky one with the three rectangular prongs? I have stepped on one in the dark before. It is like a four-sided die. It always lands points up. It is the Lego of the electrical world.
It is a lethal weapon on the floor, but as a piece of engineering, it is a masterpiece of safety. It has a built-in fuse in every single plug. It has shutters on the wall socket so kids can't stick paperclips in there. The prongs are partially insulated so you can't touch them while they are live. It is arguably the safest plug in the world, but it is also the most over-engineered and bulky. It was designed during an Amhausvikihaninit.
It feels like that is the story of this whole topic. Every region optimized for something different. Safety, cost, early adoption, or domestic industry protection. And now we are the ones who have to carry the adapters. It is a testament to human ingenuity and human stubbornness all at once.
It really is, and to Daniel's point about electronic waste, think about the millions of transformers inside our devices that exist solely to step down that voltage. If we had a single standard, we could simplify the internal power supply of every single electronic device on Earth. We would save billions in manufacturing costs and reduce the carbon footprint of every gadget.
But wait, don't most modern electronics use switching power supplies that don't need a heavy transformer anyway?
Yes, exactly. That is what I was getting at with the USB-C thing. Modern switch mode power supplies are incredibly clever. They basically sample the incoming electricity at very high speeds and only take what they need. That is why your laptop charger can work in both Japan and Germany without you flipping a switch. We have solved the transformer problem with silicon instead of heavy coils of wire.
So, in a way, the need for a global standard is actually decreasing because our tech is getting better at handling the chaos. We have engineered our way around the lack of cooperation.
That is the irony. The more fragmented the world stays, the more we rely on clever silicon to bridge the gap. It is a workaround that became so good we stopped trying to fix the underlying problem. It reminds me of what we talked about in episode 280 when we discussed AI reasoning models. Sometimes we don't fix the core logic, we just build a more complex layer on top of it to handle the edge cases.
That is a deep cut, Herman. But it's true! We are living in a world of top-down fixes for bottom-up problems. So, if someone were to propose an international standard today, let us say the ISO or the UN really got serious about it, what would be the biggest hurdle? Beyond the cost.
Honestly, I think it would be the smart home transition. Right now, in 2026, we are in the middle of rewiring our lives with smart switches, dimmers, and integrated appliances using protocols like Matter. If you told people they had to replace their $3,000 smart fridge or their entire home automation system because the country was switching to a new plug standard, there would be a riot. We are more locked in now than we were in the 1950s.
Yeah, I can see that. Back then, you just had a toaster and a lamp. Now, your house is a computer that happens to have a roof. But what about the move toward DC power? I have been reading about how solar panels and home batteries are changing things.
That is the real wild card. Our solar panels produce DC. Our batteries store DC. Our LED lights and computers run on DC. Right now, we are constantly converting DC to AC to move it through the house, and then back to DC to use it. We lose about 10 to 15% of our energy in those conversions. Some visionaries are proposing DC microgrids for homes. Imagine a house that runs on 48 volts DC with USB-C ports and every...
Now that is a vision I can get behind. No more bricks, no more prongs, just a universal port for everything from your phone to your television. Imagine a world where you move to a new country and the only thing you have to pack is a bag of cables. It would be a minimalist's dream.
It would be glorious. But until then, we are stuck with the legacy of Edison's carbon filaments and AEG's love for the metric system. It is a messy, beautiful, frustrating testament to how we build our world. We don't build it perfectly. We build it on top of what came before.
It really is. I think Daniel's frustration is totally justified, but the why behind the mess is just so human. It is not that we are incompetent. It is just that we are very good at living with the consequences of our past self's decisions. We are a species of adapters, literally and figuratively.
Well said, brother. And hey, for everyone listening, if you have ever been frustrated by a travel adapter or wondered why your hairdryer sounds different in another country, you are not alone. It is one of the great unsolved puzzles of the modern age. It is the physical manifestation of our history.
Definitely. We would love to hear your thoughts on this. Have you ever had a voltage disaster? I once plugged a US power strip into a European outlet with just a physical adapter and watched it melt in about 30 seconds. Don't do that, folks. If you have stories or think we should just bite the bullet and switch to a universal standard, reach out to us through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
And while you are there, you can check out all our past episodes. We have been doing this for a long time. 282 episodes now. We have covered everything from the math of magic to why mainframes still run the world.
And if you are enjoying the show, it would mean a lot to us if you could leave a review on your podcast app or Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find us. We are just two brothers and a housemate trying to make sense of the world, and we love having you all along for the ride.
Absolutely. A quick rating or review really does make a difference in how these platforms show the podcast to new listeners. So, thanks for being part of the community.
All right, I think that is a wrap on the Great Voltage Divide. Thanks again to Daniel for sending in the prompt, even if it did make us realize how much copper we are all wasting.
Until next time, keep asking the weird questions.
This has been my weird prompts. We will see you next week.
Stay curious, everyone.
So, Herman, before we go, I have to ask, if you had to pick one plug to rule them all, which one is it?
Oh, the British Type G. No question. It is a tank. It is safe, it is sturdy, and it makes you feel like you are actually connecting to the power of the universe. Plus, you can use it as a defensive weapon if a burglar breaks in.
I knew you were going to say that. You just like things that are over-engineered and heavy.
Guilty as charged. But seriously, the fuse in the plug is a genius move. It protects the device and the house. Why did everyone else decide to skip that?
Probably because they didn't want to carry around a brick just to plug in a lamp. And stepping on one is worse than stepping on a Lego.
Fair point. Efficiency versus safety. The eternal struggle.
All right. Let us get out of here before you start explaining the history of fuses.
Too late. I have a whole book on it. Did you know the first fuses were just thin lead wires?
Save it for episode 500. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.